favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
I have no transition, but this is a hard one to do.
In-laws, am I right?
No.
Exactly. Exactly. I know. I was purposely bad. I wasn't trying to be good.
Speaking of playing games with our lives.
There we go.
Hey, there we go.
All right. That was funny. Let's just go ahead and get started. Knock this out. Jesus.
That was funny. Let's go. Okay. All right. Very political answer right there. That's nice.
No, if that was the political answer, it would have been like, and thank you for that. Moving on.
There you go.
No, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible Pupils Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, Anthony Fuentes.
Season 5, we're still in it. Yay! Haven't been canceled yet, too. Only Maybe. One episode in, but yeah, let's see.
I mean, we'll see.
We did do Rape Revenge off the bat.
I know. We have to make it to the mid-season finale.
Yeah.
Gotta see what our ratings are.
Less Rape Revenge until then. Just
right.
Less. Just
well, yeah. Less. This one, yeah. And this is a palate cleanser, as promised.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Have to start with freaking R-word on top, but yes.
Yeah,
okay.
I know. Jeez. Anyway, well, another R-word we're covering, Ready or Not.
That's right. Much more fucking billable R-word for sure.
Yeah. We're covering Ready or Not from 2019. I am very excited to cover this, and I'm very excited to discuss it with Anthony, because I wasn't sure if he was going to like it, which I always is my issue, where I'm like, I don't know if he's going to like this or not.
You know, I'll still talk about it.
Yeah, well, but here's the issue. Because we've been doing this for so long, very rarely is there a movie that, like in the beginning, we were on differing ends of the spectrum for a while for like movies. Like, it would be like, I hated it, you loved it.
For like 2 seasons.
Yeah. Or like, you hated it, I loved it, whatever. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like our brains have just been like molding into one. So now it's just like, well, yeah.
We've gradually converged, for sure.
Yeah.
Which I think makes the shit talking more special.
When it happens.
But not for this one, because this one was pretty good.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and dive right into it with ye olde IMDb giving us the breakdown, saying, quote, "A bride's wedding night takes a sinister turn when her eccentric new in-laws force her to take part in a terrifying game."
Yeah, simple plot.
That is the gist of it. But it is just, it's something simple done so well.
Less of the boyfriend douchery in here, but you know.
That's fine.
You gotta save it for the third act.
Right. This was directed by Radio Silence and was written by Guy Busick and R. Christopher Murphy.
Is that Gary Busick's son?
I don't know, actually. There is a nepotism kid in here.
Oh, that's Busey.
Busick. Jesus Christ.
We're stupid.
We're stupid.
Oh.
So, this movie is starring Samara Weaving, Adam Brody, Mark O'Brien, Henry Zerny, and Andy McDowell.
Andy McDowell's the nepotism.
Oh, actually, there's another nepotism kid.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, Hollywood.
Samara Weaving is Hugo Weaving's niece.
I knew it.
How many Australian weavings could there be?
They're all from the weaving colony. What are you talking about? They produce these fuckers.
Yeah,
but
so
play.
Samara Weaving is Hugo Weaving's niece.
All right.
And then her dad, Hugo Weaving's brother, is also a director.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah. This movie was released on August 27th, 2019 at the Fantasia Film Festival, and on August 21st, 2019, wide release in the United States and Canada.
USA.
USA.
That's right.
Best country ever.
That's right.
Nothing ever goes wrong here. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Bye-bye loans.
Shut up. You are going to hold on to this forever.
Actually, until I see the balance drop. Right now, they're still figuring that shit out. Mm. But when I see it, then I'm just like, Ready or Not, I'm coming to fucking spend, baby.
There's that it's not a stupid TikTok sound, but it's just like something, something, hating America, something, something, and then it's just, it breaks to the Star Spangled Banner, and it's just like, USA, USA, red, white, and blue, motherfucker, these colors don't run.
That's true. You know what? It is one of those things where I'll shit talk America as much as possible, but if I hear one accent, be like, and then I'm like, no, you shut the fuck up. You shut the fuck up. Freedom, baby.
Interesting. I'll shit talk with anyone. The budget for this movie was $6 million, and its box office earning was a whopping $75.6 million.
57.6. That was the dyslexic part of you coming
the
out.
The dyscalculia
right.
was yeah, right, coming in strong.
You said this so confidently. That was great.
57.6. I was like, oh, wow, I actually read that. Fuck. Shit. Well,
You know what? It looks like a $60 million movie, though. This movie looks amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks, I mean, yeah. Oh, so good. I mean, also for a relatively, like, small set, like, you just have, like, the house. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, like, really go, you know, maybe the yard, but mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah, no, really, really well contained. This is the, what do they call them? Fuck. I can't think of right now. There's a specific TV type episode that takes place in one room.
Oh, bottle
episode.
Yeah, or a bottle.
I've specifically mentioned
this. You've mentioned it on the episode on the podcast before, and I've heard it mentioned like scent, and I'm like, I know what that is.
Yes, that's right. Oh, I cannot remember. I'm getting old. Anyways, so now to talk about this film, obviously. So we've tackled the filmmaking collective Radio Silence several times on this podcast, but we haven't covered their history in earnest until now, until this episode, episode number 2, season 5, baby. So, there's more names. Okay. Bettinelli Open and Vieja met first in the mid-2000s, I got that, in the back row of an acting class. The day Vieja had signed the lease on his first apartment in good old sunny Los Angeles, which is going to burn the fuck out of us when this episode releases. They became fast friends and, of course, creative collaborators, much like two friends who met each other in Riverside, California at a mid-range tech company for real estate.
Weird.
Yeah, it just happens that way.
Yeah.
So, Bettinelli... God, this is a tough one. Bettinelli... I'm going to call him B.O. B.O. kind of knew he struck gold from the beginning, understanding the importance of surrounding yourself with like-minded creatives.
Yeah, his name's Matt.
Wow, okay, interesting. I like B.O. better. Radio Silence was formed in 2011 by Matt B.O., Tyler Gillette, and Chad Vieja.
Yeah, normally I butcher the names, yeah. And so this is really refreshing for me.
Right? Chad Vieja is such a name. That is an interesting one. The collective had worked together previously as Chad, Matt, and Rob were known for their blend of comedy, adventure, sci-fi, and horror.
I like that was their brand name. We are Chad, Matt, and Rob.
Chad, Matt, Rob.
And Rob.
But when it came to the name, it was kind of an inside joke and a poke at their own insignificance. Quote, "We used to always say it to each other," says B.O. "When we're trying to get started, it's nothing but obstacles.
Just Bettinelli.
I can't do it.
Bettinelli
Open. Okay.
Open.
When you say it like very matter-of-factly, I can probably do it.
Okay.
Okay.
You could just call him Bettinelli even.
You gave me both names in the outline.
I know that's because that's his name, motherfucker.
All right, let's fucking go. We got this. We got this. We're good.
We're good. We're yes. professionals.
But Bettinelli said the way that we dealt with that kind of rejection was to be like, "Hey, have you heard from so-and-so? Radio Silence, Radio Silence." It was such a joke among us that basically nobody wanted to work with us. End quote. So Matt Bettinelli Open. Actually, much better when you yell at me. Perfect.
Okay, no, yell at Anthony more. Yeah,
yell at me and I'll get the idea. It's like, oh, I need a treat afterwards, yeah. Obviously. There's a Popeye's right outside. I'm perfect.
Positive reinforcement.
Exactly. Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to get that mac and cheese. So, is originally from Oakland, California. He is the founding guitarist of punk band Link 80 and a graduate of the University of California, Santa Cruz.
Yes.
What are they banana slugs?
They are the banana slugs.
The motherfucking he's a banana slug. And of course, in the early 2000s, he wound up living with Akiva Schaffer, Jorma Taccone, and Andy Samberg, the wildly successful comedy trio known as Lonely Island. Chiz in your pants.
Everybody. He was there for Dick in a Box. Like.
Wow. Wow. He's like, oh, God. These guys are really elevated. I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So Tyler Gillette is originally from Flagstaff, Arizona, and a graduate of the University of Arizona. So...
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Good way to go, Chad. Or no, that's not Chad. No, but... Chad's coming up. Chad Vieja is originally from Punxsutawney.
It's Punxsutawney.
Oh.
Have you...
I've never heard of Punxsutawney. Never.
You've never, like...
I've never seen this assortment of letters.
Punxsutawney?
Nah.
Like, you know, when they do, like, Groundhog's Day. Have you ever watched Groundhog's Day?
I never paid attention to the fucking name of the town. Oh, my God. Punxsutawney?
Pennsylvania. So, during Groundhog's Day, not the movie, but, like, the actual, like, stupid fucking...
As a cultural
The stupid holiday. Yeah. There is Punxsutawney Phil.
Okay.
The name of the fucking whatever. I
never knew as my the groundhog.
Beaver? Groundhog. Yeah. Yeah. Duh.
How do we two people running a fucking show?
How do we drive?
Fill weird gaps. I don't understand that at
how
all.
How do we drive and pay taxes? Never know.
What's his name again? Punxsutawney.
Phil.
Phil. Oh, okay. Of course it's a fucking Phil, dude. Afraid of his own goddamn shadow.
Yeah, exactly. Hope you're listening, Phil. Anyway, Punxsutawney Phil, the groundhog, lives in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And that's where the whole holiday takes place. It's like a huge deal.
My lore for that holiday ends at Bill Murray. That's it. It just ends right there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
For anybody who had any kind of vested interest in Groundhog's Day. It's going to be 100 and something degrees this week in Los Angeles, so...
I know, I feel like that threw you off. Like, he was on fire the second he learned it was going to be over 100 degrees next week in Los Angeles. He was like, fuck.
Yeah, I lost it. No. I live in a factory. I'm going to cook.
You're going to bake.
Well, you know.
Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
That's why I just get really high. Because I don't care as much.
You don't care when you're high?
No.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
I am so much more, like, sensitive to, like, anything when I'm high. Like, if I'm, like, vaguely uncomfortable while I'm high, I'm, like, it's, like, ruined for me. I'm, like, I gotta go to bed.
No, I'm, like, blended in. I'm good.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm a tiny little boy. I don't fucking...
I'm just a tiny little man. I'm just a
tiny little man. Tiny little 35-year-old man. Jesus fucking... Okay, anyways, this fucking guy lived in the groundhog shit, and he was a graduate of Mercyhurst College and an original member of the Center for Information Research, Analysis, and Training, which sounds really impressive, but we just don't know what that means.
I have no idea. No. There wasn't a Wikipedia page. I have no idea what it means. I'm sure it means something to someone, and sorry, don't know.
CIRAT.
Crit.
There you go. Okay, cool. Way to go, buddy. You did it. Anyways, radio
sound. No, I missed. I know it's not crit. It's Kurt. CIRT. Kurt? No, I can't. I don't. It's not a word.
It is a Monday.
Sorry.
We are losing it today. So Radio Silence, as a collective, directed VHS 2012, back in the day, Devil's Due in 2014, Southbound in 2015, Ready or Not in good old 2019, which we're covering today,
woo-hoo,
Phobias in 2021, which I had not seen, and VHS 94 in 2021, which I was surprised by how fucking good it was, and which also really, really surprised me, as covered in our finale episode last season, Scream, from 2022. So, and of course, their untitled 6th screen film coming out next year, baby.
Yeah.
So these guys are on it. Okay. Way to go, Radio Silence.
Yeah. And you're just keeping it going, buddy.
Oh, I'm still going. Okay, cool. Never mind. I gotta look at the outlines better. Anyways.
That's fine. I added that as you were in the bathroom. So I was just like, shit, I have to distribute.
Good times. So in November 2017, it was announced that Matt Bettinelli opened.
You got it!
I did.
I'm really glad Bettinelli didn't become your new Poughkeepsie Tapes.
No, not there. Good old B.O. and Tyler Gillette would direct the film. From a screenplay by Guy Busick, not Busey, and R. Christopher Murphy, who, there's a lot of Murphys out there, so way to go, buddy.
Yeah, so his name in the IMDb, trivia was Ryan Murphy, and I was like, no way. It's not that Ryan Murphy. It's not... American Horror Story Ryan Murphy.
No.
It wasn't. It's a different Ryan Murphy.
He probably had to actually stage his name this way.
Yeah, he probably had to use his middle name as a name just so he'd be like, ah, yes.
Yeah, see? And that works out for me because when I break into Hollywood, I gotta remember they don't hire Latinos. So this is perfect. And Anthony Fuentes, not a lot of them out there that aren't, you know, the rest are kind of convicts.
I mean,
so
it also doesn't help that you don't have a middle name.
That's true. Yeah, I'm a two-name boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no middle name at all.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
That is, I mean, you know.
It was never even on the table. It was just never an option? You have these three first names, or my mom had four first names she was going between, and then she just picked, like, okay, that and the last name, and you're good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know the other ones?
Yes, I do.
So it was going to be, Anthony was, of course, on there, but it was also Julian was one.
Julian.
Damien was another one. I know.
Damien would have been fitting.
Damien Fuentes.
Well, Damien, I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
As the fucking son of the devil.
Right.
Or Dante.
Dante?
Yeah, it would have been Dante also.
You would have been an awesome Dante.
I would have loved Dante,
although, alternative universe, you, as named Dante.
Dante Fuentes
would have been like... a bully.
Yeah, no.
And like super soul, even though you're still the same height.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you would have had like a height complex. Like it would have been like
it would have been definitely a little more aggressive version, I would say, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah. And Damien and me would have just been like, I don't know.
Moodier somehow.
A little moodier, yeah, little emo boy.
Yeah.
Julie and me, I think, is generally the same guy, except maybe get laid even more. I don't know.
Is that possible?
Julian's a good name. Yeah, but then she chose Anthony. So that's how you
Anthony fits, yeah. For me,
What were the alternatives?
My middle name was always going to be Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stalk me. and my first full name, which I've never said on this podcast,
yes.
it was my dad told me that if he had more of a say, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to name me after Barbara Gordon.
Oh, that would have been interesting. I could see that. I can I can see Gordon Webster.
Yeah, for sure. No, it would have been Barbara.
I know.
Like, I would have had an old woman's name my entire life.
Oh, that would have been a good name. I think I can see you being a Barbara.
A Barbara?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Except, I think, a little more bitchy. Bitchy Barbara. Bitchy Barbara Webster.
Oh, yeah.
Would have been it.
Barbara Webster is a fucking cunt.
Oh, yeah. Bitchy Barbara Webster is basically... Her middle name's Karen. Perfect. Just right there.
Oh, yeah. She would have been a real
bitch. That girl gets service immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she just stares. Where are we at? That was a great aside.
We're talking about Ryan Christopher Murphy.
Yeah. Oh, poor dude. Okay, if it's any consolation, anybody who has my name, they're all either convicts or something else. So.
But to be fair, like my dad told me this like years and years later. But for the most part, my mom and my dad were pretty much like decided what they wanted to name their kids on like their first or second date, which I think is
adorable.
Yeah. Also crazy because I could never.
No,
but
no.
But yeah. Mm-mm. So
no, I could. I don't think I could either. That's a funky one for sure. But I'll just use my backup names as the potential name for the next person that comes through. So I think they're good ones. I do appreciate, though, that my mom was like, no, you're not going to be named after somebody or anything like that. You're just an original fucking boy. There you go.
That's good. Yeah. No, my middle name, both... I think I told you this, but my middle name was the middle name. Both my maternal and my paternal grandmother both had the same middle name.
Yes. Yeah. I remember you saying this before.
And so they were just like, well, she gets that. Mm-hmm. Oldest daughter, done and dusted.
Done and dusted. I like it. Let's move on. It was great, though. Everybody learned a little insight. If you're listening,
yeah, a little
got
background.
A lot of information there.
Please don't stalk me. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. I'm packing.
Good luck finding me out there. Just saying, there's a lot of asshole Fuentes out there that apparently took the trail off. So good. Way to go, bros. Anyways, principal photography was from October 15, 2018. To November 19th, 2018. Very, very short duration.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. At locations in the Toronto area, including Casa Loma, Sunnybrook Park, and Clairville Conservation Area. And, of course, the Parkwood Estate in Oshawa, Ontario.
Wow. Oh, I love the Canadians.
I know. They're American enough. So, Margot Robbie was considered for the role of Grace, but she turned their asses...
Did you say Margot Robbie?
Huh?
You said Margot Robbie.
Robbie. It's Robbie. Jesus fucking Christ. I had a teacher named Mr. Robbie. So, my natural thing is to say Robbie. Ay, ay, ay. That's the stocking material right there. There you go, guys. Anyways, Margot Robbie was considered for the role of Grace, but she turned their asses down, we're assuming, and producers picked someone who looked just like her, Samara Weaving. It was very good. She looks a lot fucking like her.
She's in, like, the Margot Robbie cinematic universe, because there's, like, four actresses who look just like Margot Robbie.
They're Margot Robbie enough. They're enough. But
Dollar General.
She's a little more than Dollar General, I think.
She's Target.
Yeah, no, she's like a good Target. Yeah. She's like Target original brand.
She's Target.
Yeah. She's in the good aisle.
Yeah.
She's in the good aisle.
The right good there. Aisle.
You get the Levi's or you get the fucking Goodyear pants or whatever the fuck they call them. Good something?
Home.
Goodwill?
No. Goodwill's a thrift store.
I went tires to thrift store.
Move on.
Good neighbor.
Like a good neighbor.
God damn it. What are they? Okay, we'll find it. It's going to piss me off because I own those pants. Anyways. They're the only ones that fit the short Mexican legs. Samara Weaving had to be taught how to drive, or at least how to look like she's driving. So 17 different versions of Grace's wedding dress were created by costume designer Avery Plews to show the progress of Grace's night. And how her clothes correspond, of course, her personality. Good, I think that was a good bit. Okay, cool, yeah. On top of that, Grace's yellow Chuck Taylor sneakers were actually custom painted for the film, as Converse no longer makes that color because they're fucking lame.
Good and gather.
Is it couldn't gather?
No. That's according to Google.
Couldn't gather?
That's their food, yeah.
No, I'm thinking that the pants and like the clothes.
Oh.
Yeah. Good. You're right though. That is the food.
Well, now I have to figure it out. Hold on.
It's Target.
Goodfellow.
Oh shit. I should have known that. That's the mafia one. So the set designers only had five. What's that word?
Hold on. Did I fuck up?
Candelabras?
Oh, yeah, candelabras.
What's candelabras?
What some goth you are. No, it's, you've seen it before. It is a candle holder, but it's the one that has, like, you can hold, like, six candles on it.
Okay. Yeah. It has a name.
Yeah.
It's a candelabra. Okay.
I thought I fucked up. You just don't know the name of things.
I don't know the name of things. I'd never said the word candelabra until right now, but apparently set designers only had five of these motherfuckers, so they had to keep moving them around to populate rooms and hallways they were needed in. Wow.
It's
$6 million, huh?
Hey, they had to make that shit stretch.
Oh, that's all that Adam Brody money going over.
Hey, he is worth every cent.
I agree. That was my boy in the OC.
Candelabra.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
So, okay, thank you for bringing up Adam Brody in the OC. Because I've never watched the OC. I just know that he was in it.
Yeah, I grew up on that shit.
Interesting. I grew up on One Tree Hill. Another story for another day. He's aged like a fine wine.
Oh my god, he never fucking... Like, dude, what else was he in? He was in one of the Scream movies.
No, he was in Jennifer's Body.
Okay, Jennifer's Body.
He was in...
No, he was in Scream 4 too, wasn't he?
No, he was in Shazam. Oh, he could have been in it.
Yeah. He was a cop.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, he was. Yes,
I mean, that's still like 10 years ago, but either way, this guy, like...
Point is, the man has aged like a fine wine, because, like, when he was in OC, and maybe just my tastes have changed, but, like, when he was in the OC, I did not think he was attractive at all. Now, he is a specimen.
It's funny.
He's so hot.
I feel like when I watched him in the OC, part of me was like, I really liked his character, because he was nerdy and sarcastic, and I was that. So I was like, oh my god, like, I want him to get the hottie, and he got the fucking hottie. And I was like, yes.
Well,
this is how we do it.
This is how we do it. No, I never watched OC, so I had no idea. But I just thought he was like, you know, he just looked like a dork.
I like seeing dorks succeed, obviously.
Of course. But then, I remember, and then in Jennifer's Body, he plays like this, like, like eyeliner wearing, mm-hmm. like dumb musician, and I'm like, I'm in love with you.
That's what got you. Okay, yeah. There you go. Yeah, no, he doesn't age.
Yeah, the more instruments someone plays, the more likely I'm to sleep with them, no questions asked. Goth
girl at heart, right there, right yeah. there.
It's unfortunate, but it's true.
I don't know how I've been with so many goth girls and never touched the fucking
It's because you have the nerdy thing going for you.
Yeah, I had to go these. And again, naturally just dark black hair.
Yeah.
It's naturally, yeah. like, just it does get barely mm-hmm. any brown. Barely. Yeah. And my pale fucking bloodless body. Anyways.
But, like, we could sacrifice you.
Yeah,
you
they make definitely a
fine
could.
Sacrifice.
I'm skinny as shit, though. They're not going to get a lot of blood out of this.
It's yeah, you're anemic, too. Like, yeah. they'd have to, like, hang you upside down, and, like, it'd be a whole thing.
It really is, like, more trouble than it's worth, I would say, for sure.
I mean, that's why I haven't killed you yet.
Oh, cool. Thank God. Medical deficiency coming in once.
Coming in clutch once.
Medical deficiency? Saved my life. Saved my life. Anyway, so the Ladomus family empire of board games is based on the now defunct game manufacturers Milton Bradley Company and Parker Brothers.
Oh man, I didn't realize they were defunct. Although it made sense because once I read their names, I'm like, oh, I haven't heard about them in a while.
Yeah, I haven't uttered those words in like a decade either. But Milton Bradley and Parker Brothers games are now owned by good old Hasbro. Hey, America, right there, right? Just America! Consolidating everything.
Fuck perfect. Yeah.
You don't need competitors for the board games.
Yeah.
No, the games are fine. So during production, designers submitted nearly 200 fictional board game names, but only 8 or so were cleared by the legal department because they're fucking lame. Now, obviously, the demons lawyers from Hasbro would hunt them for sport if they crossed a fucking line.
Duh.
Yeah, that's why.
That's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, that's how the law works.
Personally.
Having worked in Hollywood, exactly it. Dead. Anyways, for example, the pepper box revolver wielded by Emily?
Yeah.
I hate the spelling. Has been the version...
It's a rich white person's version of Emily.
I know. Fucking add an extra fucking letter. Has been the version of the gun weapon in the North American edition of the board game Clue since 1972.
Nice.
40 fucking years. Jesus. So, wait, so 40 or 50? 50 years. Shit. I'm so bad with time. 50 years.
It continues forward at an unrelenting pace.
As you can see, my maturity level stopped 10 years ago. So
that's fine.
Grace originally dies in the earlier draft of the script after being successfully sacrificed by Alex and his family. But the producers changed it to Grace surviving and her in-laws, including Alex, being killed after failing to complete the ritual before dawn.
Like it so much more. If they had won, then it would have sent such a different message as opposed to, like, just like, rich people will always win, as opposed to this one where it's just like, fuck the rich people.
Yes. See, I feel like tonally, the movie benefits from her winning.
I agree.
If it was a darker film in like a...
Well, there's two moments where you think, all right, this is it. Game over. This is it. Like, you know. Well, I'm curious on your thoughts on that because this is the second time I've watched it. So I knew the whole time. Watch it, like...
I mean, I knew by standard Hollywood procedure she would make it. But the way in which they went about it, I do like that the movie strings you along. It's like, oh, there's no fucking way. Good movies make you feel like, no, I want the scene where this turns around completely.
Well, and you know what's crazy is that I forgot a lot of it. So I was just like, how does she? I know she gets out of it, but how does she get out of it? And then, and I was still, even though this was my second time watching it, I was just like holding my pillow at work because I was watching this at work today.
Like, lady!
I was just like, oh no one need anything from me. Moving right along. Ready or Not grossed $28.7 million in the United States and Canada and $28.9 million elsewhere for a worldwide total of $57.6 million. Against, of course, the production budget of $6 million. I got it this time. Fuck it.
Hey! That is a hit.
Excuse me.
That's a hit.
On Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 88% based on 311 reviews. Ooh. And an average rating of 7.2 out of 10. The site's critical consensus reading, quote, smart, subversive, and darkly funny. Ready or Not is a crowd-pleasing horror film with giddily entertaining bite.
Ooh, that's a good fucking little summation right there, Rotten Tomatoes. Why don't you fucking slow down?
P. Peter Dubridge, wrote in Variety that, quote, this deliciously diabolical sophomore feature, which hails from the resourceful low-budget trio known as Radio Silence, represents a departure for indie distributor Fox Searchlight, which has a real winner on its hands. That rare get-out-like horror movie capable of delivering superficial diversion alongside deep cultural critique.
All right, buddy.
That was wordy as fuck.
Yeah, that was really surprisingly wordy. Like, he went really wordy, and then he went, like, very casual, and he's like, back to wordy!
Yeah, there was it was a journey.
Mr. fucking DeBruges.
DeBruges.
Yeah, get your shit together, DeBruges.
David Sims of The Atlantic wrote, quote, the real fun in Ready or Not comes from the ways it subverts its time-tested story, balancing wry commentary and straightforward horror in its portrait of fumbling arrogance and curdled privilege.
Oh, I love the word curdled privilege.
Curdled privilege. Curdled privilege is delightful.
That's very good. Way to go.
Mm-hmm. Fans on Letterboxd are also no exception to the critics' praise, sharing their thoughts. Ready or Not has over 250,000 reviews on the site.
Hot damn.
With a 3.6 out of 5 average rating. I think this might be our highest review.
Well, I was going to say it's actually very emblematic of an Alex Webster episode where it's either in the six-figure amount of reviews or it's in the, like,
less four?
Than, yeah. Like, oh, it's like has, like, 30 reviews.
Either everyone on Letterboxd, like, has reviewed it or, like, 12 people have and I am one of the 12.
Or it's Bloodsucking Bastards or it's one of those fucking
right,
movies.
Okay, fuck
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about Pedro Pascal, but whatever.
Yeah, that was a great month. That's a good month.
So kicking it off with Aaliyah's 4.5-star review, quote, in the name of the Father, Parasite, the Son, Knives Out, and the Holy Spirit, Ready or Not, unquote.
That was good.
And it's true. I feel like those all kind of have like a same kind of underlying like we hate rich people vibe.
Yeah, and there's a certain way I think dialogue, you know, like story beats play out that is kind of consistent across the board.
When you saw Knives Out, that wasn't the first time you'd seen it, right?
I actually mistaken it for this movie. So it's still on the schedule, but I've been trying to watch Knives Out for like 2 years.
You still haven't seen it?
What the fuck, man? I downloaded Destroy All Humans on Game Pass, and that actually is surprisingly engaging game story-wise.
What is it?
It's about, you get to play an alien, and you get to kill a bunch of fucking people, and it's great.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it's steeped in 1950s nostalgia.
Interesting.
Very McCarthyist. It's really fun.
Okay.
Yeah? Yeah, well, it's free.
I was gonna say, if it's worth a game, I mean, I have Game Pass, so.
Yeah, download that bitch. It's really good.
Yeah, and I have not, like, deactivated my Game Pass, which is crazy, considering that, like, my Xbox has just been collecting dust until I started playing Multiverses.
Oh my god, what a good game. We gotta play. I gotta find out your fucking...
I know, I'll look at it and send it to you tonight before I forget. But anyway, Patrick Willems with 3 stars, quote, finally, the Adam Brody-sance is happening, unquote.
What did it? We need more. I don't have
kind
enough.
Kind of, sort of. I think he... Adam Brody.
We need more Brody.
Oh, I agree.
Give me more Brody.
So, he was in... Yeah, I mean, he's kind of been in some more stuff, because he was in Ready or Not, and then he was in Shazam, and then he's going to be in the next Shazam, so...
Okay, I'll take it. Like,
totally forgot he was married to Leighton Meester.
Who?
Did you watch Gossip Girl?
No.
Did you watch the Good Girls Go Bad video by Cobra Starship?
No.
I make the good girls go bad. All right. No, that's all I know that she's been in, but she was in Gossip Girl. She was like one of the main characters in Gossip Girl.
It's going to be a Google later on for sure.
It's fine.
For sure.
But they were all on the same, like, channel. So it makes sense that they know that they like okay that
no
makes sense.
OC was on channel 11 Fox.
Was it? I thought it was the CW.
Nope, not CW. That was a Fox. That's a Fox show right there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just confusing them because let me look.
It was CW-ish for sure.
It was CW-ish, but also let's see here. I was 8 when the show started.
Oh, see? I was definitely not 8. So yeah.
I was in 7th grade when the show ended. That's why I never watched it.
And I was just like...
That means nothing to me.
That's the theme song. That's the theme song right there. It's called California. That's the song.
Oh. Yeah. You just suck at humming.
Yeah. Really bad at it. Really bad.
I'm sorry.
Can't even bring it up for the Brody.
Oh, no. Not even for the Brody.
We're just going to have so much fun with Adam Brody this episode.
It's great. No, it's, as we should. Yeah, no, he was great in this movie.
He's a good dude.
So, Jared, with a warning to us all, with 3.5 stars, saying, quote, "This is what happens when you wear your Converse with your dress," unquote.
Oh, shit. All right, fucking drud.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like.
Although I kind of want to do the Converse with, like, something now.
A dress?
Yeah, I'll do it with a dress. Fuck it.
Fuck it?
Yeah, fancy no, ass dress.
I like that it, yeah, because it also is just kind of, I don't know. For me, it was kind of poking fun at, like, pretty much every girl my age in, like, middle school and high school was like, I'm not like other girls. I'm a cool girl. I'm gonna wear Converse with my with like to my like at my with my prom dress because I'm a cool girl.
Yeah, I'm so different.
Exactly. That's what this is making fun
of. Yeah, but like if you're not wearing Converse with your prom dress, what are you doing?
Well, I just and then I was just like, I'm the dorkiest, coolest girl, and I just didn't go.
You're like, well, I'm wearing fucking high heels with the goddamn jeans. How about
well,
that,
you
baby?
You know what's so funny? Because I was at ASB, so I like, I was like, I set up and like organized so many of those dances. And by the time my senior prom rolled around, I had quit ASB for a multitude of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I'm done. I'm not going. Fuck it. I've been to enough. And like, I was wearing like fucking heels at those bitches, which is why I don't wear them now because my ankles are weak.
That's funny.
Awful. Anyway, so I thought that was funny. Anyway, Lily with 5 stars simply says, Samara Weaving and Scream 6 will change lives.
Oh shit, she's in there too?
Yeah, I guess so. According to Letterboxd.
No, give it to me. I want to see it.
And then finally, user Haley with 4.5 stars. Quote, every now and then, I still wonder how she explained all of this to the police.
I was thinking that exact shit when it ended. I'm like, there's no way. This is a very prominent family. This is going to be fucking weird.
But she's like, they just exploded.
Yeah.
Anyway, the people loved it. What did they love about it? Let's talk about it.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go.
Now, let's dive in with our very first Anthony Fuentes, our very first play-by-play of season 5.
Let's fucking go.
Would you like to be yellow or black?
I'm gonna go yellow.
Okay.
I want the distinctive color right there.
All right, kick it off.
Okay, so, as a child, Daniel Ledomus is confronted in his family's mansion by a wounded man named Charles, who just begs him for help.
Instead, Daniel alerts his family, who arrive in ceremonial masks and robes. Despite his bride's pleas, Charles is shot with a spear gun and dragged away into a locked room.
Oh my god, so efficient. Anyways, dun, dun, dun. Title card, 30 years later.
You're right, title card.
It's time. Daniel's brother Alex, the estranged son of the owners of the successful Ledomus Family Games Company, is set to marry Grace, a former foster child, and which is often a trope with these fucking horror movies.
Oh, what, the former foster child
thing?
Yeah,
I have no family, blee, blee, blee.
Maybe I can borrow yours.
Mm-hmm. They always make them so rebellious, too. They're like, I'm not like other people, wow.
Yeah, or, I mean, also she's, like, smoking in the family house. I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. Open a window. So on her wedding day, she meets the Ledomuses, Daniel and his snobbish wife, Charity, Alex's cocaine-addicted sister, Emily, and her oafish husband, Fitch, and their young sons, Georgie and Gabe, Alex's unpleasant aunt, Helen?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I watched this today. And his parents, Tony and Becky.
Tony! after the ceremony, Tony explains that his ancestor, Victor Ledomus, made a deal with a man named
LaBelle
to build the Ledomus fortune in exchange for his family, for the family observing a tradition. At midnight on their wedding day, every new member draws a game card from LaBelle's puzzle box.
And the whole time, of course, it's like very, like, what's the word that I'm thinking? It's very, it's very foreshadowy. It's very, like, oh, we gotta tell her. We can't tell her. Tell her what?
Well, she's also taking it very, like, this is fucking stupid, like, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Right, and they're taking it very seriously.
They're like, oh, fucking shit, okay. And then, like, her husband, now husband, he's trying to be the most sincere little, like, okay, just, like, he's like, really...
I love you.
Yeah, he's such a...
Bitch.
He gives off real bitch energy, like, immediately. And you're like, damn, does he, like, lay pipe, or what's going down here? You're like, why? Why?
I mean, he must for her to marry him. Anyway, so Grace draws a hide and seek and offers a toast to LaBelle. And as she hides with the coolest song ever playing in the background, might I add, the Ladamuses arm themselves. Alex enters the mansion's secret passages to find Grace, who witnesses Emily accidentally killing a maid who she mistakes for her.
Oh my god, Emily is hilarious.
She is hilarious. She's so dumb.
Yeah.
She is us on our most Mondays of Monday.
She just coked the fuck out.
Yeah. So she's also on, like, a bunch of pills. Like, it's great. Love
yeah,
that for
she's
her.
Real fidgety. Yeah. And has a very, very active trigger finger, I would say, for sure.
Oh.
Very sensitive. Very sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great character. Just be a chaotic presence
very.
With the rest of them, I would say, for
yes.
sure. So Alex reveals that his family is cursed. If the new member draws the hide-and-seek card, the rest of the family has to find and ritually sacrifice them before dawn, or they die instead. Good old lore drop, baby! First lore drop of the season!
The deadly game was last played by Helene's husband, Charles. With the mansion locked down, Alex disables the security system to allow Grace to escape.
Oh, fucking shit. Things are turning around because they are not finding this bitch. Anyway, so she is discovered by Daniel, who is disillusioned with the family and gives her a head start before alerting the others, leading Emily to accidentally kill another maid. Now,
again, so funny.
Daniel is, of course, Adam Brody, and
yeah,
he plays
he
it so well.
God.
So well.
He's all like, I don't know. He's disheveled and a mess, therefore I am incredibly attracted to him. I'm attracted to train wrecks. What can I say? Yeah, he's great in this movie.
I like that he's just like, you know what? Fuck. 10 seconds. Like, he's just like, whatever, I don't
care.
He's
just like, do you want a drink? And she's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's just like, whatever, I'll give you 10 seconds. And then he's like, slowly, like, 1/1000. 2/1000 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's like, 2.5. 2000.
He's just like, it's been 10 seconds. And he just fucking goes for it.
I know.
It's great.
Jason Hare. Oh, so good. So good. Is it my turn?
Yep.
Okay, so Grace's escape is blocked by the family butler, Stevens, which is a butler-ass name.
Yep.
She, in turn, splatters hot tea that he was preparing on his face, along with the little thing that it was being made in. I should know what that's called, but it's Monday, fuck it.
Mm-hmm.
And runs away.
Yeah, definitely a butler-ass name right there. With
Stevens.
Yeah, Stevens. Same in Django. Samuel Jackson's character is also Steven. So.
In what?
Django?
Oh, okay.
Django
I heard Django, like the video, or like the
Oh, you know about the Django movie with the butler?
That's why I was really confused for a second.
The butler's the one that gets it, he makes it all fall down. That's how it works. And then he dies. Because it falls on him. Because he's dumb. He's a dumb butler named Steven.
Right. Played by Samuel L. Jackson, and it's falling right as he said.
Yeah, two
like,
Steven Butlers.
He tries to get his motherfucker out, but he can't because it's the children's movie.
Yeah, because it's a PG-13, so he gets the.
Right.
But he says mother.
Well, actually, you can say fuck once in a PG-13.
They did it before because it's Jenga, and somebody didn't do the thing good, and they're like, fuck, I almost missed it. And that's what happened earlier in the movie. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, then he died.
Thank you
afterwards.
For explaining that very real, legitimate movie to
me. Yeah, that totally made a lot of money.
$12,000!
This is why you riff. This is great. Anyways. Alex is restrained. Wait, yeah. Alex is restrained by Daniel and Tony, the papa, after he attacks the ladder.
Tony!
That's right, Tony! Tony the tiger, baby. Grace is seen by a third maid, but the maid accidentally crushes herself in the dumbwaiter. Then she yells for the family.
This dumb bitch deserved everything she got in the dumbwaiter.
Such a terrible... I'm like, why did this happen? This makes no sense. No,
she was just like, no, they're looking for you. Hits the button, gets crushed to death.
Yeah.
Like, freaking Grace is, like, trying to save her. And then she's, honestly, Grace is far kinder than I. Because the second she's like, they're looking for you, I would have been like, fuck you, bye.
This is a bottom tier dumb waiter kill. Bottom tier.
Bottom tier.
Top tier, Halloween H2O. Great dumb waiter kill.
Great
dumb waiter kill.
Wow, we need to make a tier list of dumb waiter kills.
It's going to be like A, B, and F. That's it.
Well, I have a fleeting suspicion that there are more than just these.
Yeah, maybe. We'll find out. Dumb waiter tier list coming at you guys.
Right after our titty tier list.
That's right. Oh my god. Same fucking... We'll just do random tier list for a whole episode.
Whatever.
That'd be great.
That would actually kind of be fun to do on Twitch.
That'd be good. Yeah, I like it.
That'd be a fun Twitch thing to do. Stay tuned for that.
Mm-hmm.
So Grace runs to the stables where Georgie shoots her in the hand. She knocks him out and she punches a child, which I
always support that every time in every film.
So funny. So she knocks him out and then, startled by a goat, falls into the corpse pit.
Every rich family has.
Yes.
Every rich family.
Every multi-generational rich family has a corpse pit.
Mm-hmm.
Do not be fooled. If you search long enough, you will find their designated corpse pit.
Yeah.
And she falls into theirs.
Mm-hmm. With some fresh corpses. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But she escapes and squeezes through the front gate, pursued by Steven. She fights him off. Takes his fucking car and tries to call the police using the car's onboard system.
This was so stupid!
Yeah, this is pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But I do like that she keeps getting it over on Steven for sure. Like,
yeah.
I enjoy, like, the fucking Bugs Bunny goddamn Daffy Duck play that they have going on over here.
Okay, so the operator informs her on a recorded call, this line may be recorded for quality assurance, that the car has been reported stolen, and remotely turns it off because it's a rich people's car.
Yep.
And says the police have been sent, which, where are they?
For rich people, they usually come very quickly.
Not if it's been stolen.
They're like, I don't know about these fucking guys, though. They've been pretty shit to the rest of the officers that come by. So
right.
We'll see.
She's, like, yelling at this guy, and he's just like, all right, well, Nanny, can I help you with anything else?
Yeah,
fuck you.
I love his just like, dude, I'm not paying enough for this shit. Like,
yeah.
I'm just doing fucking policy here.
I get it. Even then, it's just like, I don't know. I thought this was one of the, like, this was, like, the little, like, brief soggy part of the movie where I was just like, okay, my suspension of disbelief, like, I believe demonic rich people. I believe that.
Yeah.
This, not so much.
No, I totally bought this. This is corporate policy. This is, like, America right here. Like, I'm not paid enough to help you despite how legitimate your screens are.
Maybe I'm just like, because, like, every iPhone has an emergency call feature.
Does she have her phone on her?
No. She doesn't. And that's established. I just mean, like, if someone was saying, people are trying to kill me, I need the police.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I don't think it would be company policy to be like, oh, this car has been reported stolen. I'm shutting it down remotely.
Like, you could be lying to me, but I have to.
Why would you even call it in the first place? Because she calls them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call her.
Oh, I don't know. This
thought about it for a second too long.
Yeah. This to me screams corporate, like, yeah, whatever, motherfucker. Like,
okay,
that's
fair
it.
Enough.
That's it.
No,
that's, fair, it just feels that
way. That is very fair.
Part of the commentary track, for sure.
Yeah. This is one of the one things, though, that I was just like, suspension of disbelief. God.
I don't know. Yeah, I bought this. It was weird. But anyways, the operator... Oh, you already read that part. So Steven subdues Grace with a tranquilizer gun, but she awakens and attacks him, causing the car to crash and kill him. And I love that the family's on the line. He's like, I fucking got her. Fuck yeah. We're coming in.
I'm blasting my classical music. Fuck this bitch. And then all the whole family is just like, turn around, you idiot. And this is why you don't FaceTime and drive.
Exactly. But I also like that his character flaw of being just so into the music ends up killing his ass.
Agreed.
And wakes her up.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. So, Daniel, near the crash, captures Grace after realizing that his father is secretly watching, which sucked.
Yeah, he plays it so well, though. Again, Adam Brody is the fucking G.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Delamas. The Ledamases. Delamas.
I know.
drink from a ceremonial cup. But as they prepare for the ritual, they begin to vomit blood. No, no, no.
Daniel then frees Grace, having laced the cup with...
We're losing it!
The cup with a non-lethal dose of hydrochloric acid.
Oh, fucking guys. So Charity shoots Daniel in the neck, not her husband, leaving him to bleed to death. And Grace disarms her ass and bludgeons Tony with a lantern for good measure.
So this scene was really sad to me, because Daniel finally gets his soul back, because like he kept making like kind of stabs the whole time where he was just like, I hate this family. You all suck. We all deserve to die.
Yeah, and he had a really good exposition moment with his wife where he's like, when I told you about this, like, man, you couldn't wait to start this shit.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't wait to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. He was like, yeah, I see you, little fucking gold digger. Like, he might as well just be like, she give me money. Like, that should have just clipped right fucking there. Great character.
Yeah, agreed. So, in the ongoing chaos, the mansion is set on fire, and Grace is attacked by Becky, whom she beats to death with LaBelle's box.
Might as well.
Just fucking do it. And she beats the shit out of her.
Yeah, definitely. For poor fucking matriarch got it. Anyways, Alex escapes his restraints and goes to rescue Grace. But she pulls away from him because, honestly, this is a lot. This is a lot for one person to go through.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Alex also finds Daniel's like dead body and is like super, super sad because obviously like they like were super close and that was something that we kind of glossed over. But they like the movie did a really good job of establishing them as kind of like them against their shitty family.
Yeah. And also I don't think he realizes that she wasn't the one that did it. So in his mind, she's like the perpetrator of this violence.
Which she's not.
She's not.
His wife did it, but... Mm-hmm.
But she ain't alive to tell the story, so there you go.
The wife is.
Oh, is she?
Was she? Charity? She the one who shot him in the neck?
Oh, she is. Yeah,
she made it to the very end.
Yeah.
realizing that she will never trust him, and he will almost certainly leave him once she escapes, he subdues her to complete the ritual, which... Saw it coming.
Yeah. He kind of sunk cost at this point. He's like, well, I mean, if this isn't going to work out,
might as well try again.
Yeah. So Grace breaks free from the ritual table after being stabbed in the shoulder just as the sun rises. And it is a very hopeless feeling scene for sure.
Yeah.
Like, very, very hopeless.
I missed the labeling here. Keep going.
Gotcha. The Ledamuses brace for death, but nothing happens, believing themselves safe. Helene attempts to attack Grace, but suddenly explodes mid-stride, with the rest of the family exploding soon after in a very glorious just pulp of blood.
This is crazy. Also, we kind of glossed over this, but Helene was fucking crazy. She had a bloodlust. Exactly. Like, the woman had an axe. Like, she was just ready to murk anyone who looked at her wrong.
She really was. Old grandma, or not grandma.
She was an aunt.
Old aunt. This debutante fucking lady.
Yeah.
Just vicious.
Insane.
Total RBF the whole damn
time. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So in his last moments, Alex desperately attempts to apologize to Grace, but she declares she wants a divorce and throws her wedding ring at him as he explodes.
Pick up the ring. Pawn it.
just sell it. You can start over.
Exactly. So LaBelle briefly appears and gives Grace a slight head nod. And she walks out of the burning manor. As the police arrive and ask what happened, Grace replies, in-laws.
Cut to credits.
There you go. Yeah. That was Ready or Not.
Woo!
That was a fun synopsis, actually. I like that. That was good. Yeah. This is a very absurd-ass movie.
It's absurd, but, like, when you watch it, like, it kind of makes sense. Like, it, I don't know. Like,
well, there's an energy to it.
There's a vibe to it that is just so fucking fun.
Yes, I agree. Like, the movie is really hard to look away from. Like, I remember, because, you know, sometimes I play my Switch, whatever it was, I was doing some shit in Assassin's Creed. I was like, no, you're being put down now. I'm focusing on this. This is a good goddamn movie.
It's so good. So let's kick off discussion. Thoughts on Ready or Not?
Good movie. Good goddamn movie. Honestly, very stylish. Mm-hmm. It has a fantastic cast all the way through. They all play their parts perfectly. I don't know. The story's fun. It's unique. It's brutal. It seems commercial as fuck, which I really appreciate that it made a lot of money. Because, it definitely has that almost mass appeal if it wasn't so bloody, but I'm glad it's as bloody as it is.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely is, like, a... this is the most R-rated PG-13 movie.
That's a good descriptor. I love that fucking description. It has PG-13 vibes with R-rated just, like, brutality.
Yeah, like, it's super gory. There's tons of cursing. Like, all the things that, like, you kind of want from a good slasher flick.
Yeah.
But the way that, like, just the vibes were, and especially, like, I want to say the marketing also for this movie, like, I definitely got, like, PG-13 vibes.
Oh, I would show this to children.
I'd show this to children, no questions asked. No,
I definitely, the shit that I grew up with, I'm like, dude, this is nothing. You guys are gonna fucking love this.
Okay, you sound like someone who had your ass beat as a kid, and you're like, oh yeah, I for sure am really looking forward to, like, beating the shit out of my kids.
I watched a lot of Stephen King when I was, like, 8, so, yeah.
I don't know, I think there's a difference between showing your kids this versus showing your kid It.
Okay, yeah, but that's what I mean, like, the threshold for me is way up here. I'm like, ready or not? Totally fine. Comparatively.
To It?
It's way less bad than It.
This?
Yeah.
I would...
It's terrifying. This is not terrifying. I'm not gonna have bad dreams from this fucking movie. I'm gonna have bad dreams from It.
I did have bad dreams from It, and I never even saw the movie. My uncle just explained what happened.
Yeah, Pennywise is a motherfucker. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Basically just said that there was an evil clown living in the drain, and I was just like, I'm never showering again.
How am I already hearing Tim Curry's voice? Holy shit. Yeah. No.
Hi, Georgie.
Yeah, exactly. See, I think there's a difference between, like, really unsettling, and again, this gives PG-13 vibes, like, in that fun, like, it's just fun, it's just good, it's just brutal.
I mean, it is super fun.
It's just brutal as fuck. Like, it's fine. Be brutal. It's, you know,
yeah,
they'll get it.
Fuck it.
They'll be alright.
Whatever. Yeah. They'll talk about it in therapy later. It's fine.
I guess, you know, yeah, maybe.
No, I... obviously, because I picked this.
Yes.
Love this movie. I watched it once, and not years ago, but I watched it June of 2020 for my birthday.
Uh-huh.
And that's the last time I watched it before this.
Oh, nice.
But it made such an impression, and I was so, like, into it that I was just like, I need to cover this eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just been on my list until now.
Oh, great. Great pick. I mean, we have so many movies we wait until, like, forever to fucking do.
It's just kind of always in the... Yeah. In, you know, you have the movies that are always kind of in the back of your mind that you could, at the drop of a hat, just be like, what if we did this?
There's just so many horror movies.
There's just so many.
Yeah.
So, obviously, love this movie. It's just fun. Like, this is a movie that, like, you can watch on, like, a movie night with your friends. And, like, if people are kind of, like, chit-chatting, like, they're not necessary. Like, context clues are like, easy to pick up.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm kind of giving away the rate this movie out of 5 blanks. But this movie has so many, like, lingering, like, pay attention to this, it's gonna come up later. Mm-hmm. Like, the cigarette case, like, the box, like, all these stupid little things where it's just, like, that come back later where it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense why that's there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I love it.
Oh, no, it's a great movie, honestly. It's a really, really good, solid choice, and you're right, like, it is a weird, like... You can pay attention or you cannot. You're going to get something great out of the experience either way. If you pay attention more, you're going to get a lot more. If not, you're going to look up and see some amazing fucking kills. And you can kind of be there for the ride. It's a ride.
Agreed. I mean, it's like a... not to go too on the nose, but it's kind of like a board game in that sense. Yeah, where it's definitely. Like, if you're, like, super into it and, like, reading all the rules and just trying to, like, get the most out of the experience, that's a different experience from someone who really, like, isn't super into board games and is just there trying to drink with their buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is kind of a similar experience.
I 100% agree.
So, moving on, we've kind of inadvertently covered the growth of Radio Silence.
Definitely without calling attention to it.
Yeah, as a collective until now. So I kind of wanted to talk about thoughts on their style development because we've covered at this point with VHS, yes. This movie, and then Scream, and then VHS 94.
Yeah, we talked about that one briefly.
Well, at least we've seen it, so yes. We've kind of, like, watched a bunch of their movies without kind of realizing.
I know, we really have. To me, honestly, going back from even VHS to, like, 94, and of course Ready or Not, and Scream, like, they... are the right kind of people to be pushing horror forward, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, they understand what's scary, what's funny, and how to make a good movie. Mm-hmm. They do those three things really, really well because they can put you on your toes. They can make you laugh literally the next second and not make it feel inorganic. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they know how to pace a fucking film. And I don't know which one segment they did in VHS number one. We both felt that one was pretty terrifying at parts.
Yeah.
But also, like, I mean, to me, like, the VHS one, despite me thinking of it being a mixed bag early on, is genuinely affecting in each bit. Which is something I feel like if they were able to do that pretty early on, they've only gotten better. They've just only really gotten better and better.
I feel like they've really found their creative, like, style and, like, have kind of found their stride. Because now I think it's kind of gotten easier to pinpoint. Like, especially going from Ready or Not to VHS 94 to Scream. Like, you kind of draw that narrative line of, like, kind of their style.
They have had, like, a Craven-level growth. To be honest with you.
You know, it's funny. I was reading an article or, like, an interview that kind of mentioned that.
Like, in terms of, like, how Craven found his voice versus mm-hmm. how they kind of did it.
Yeah.
I feel like the path is very similar. Like, it's really similar. VHS is very similar to, like, in terms of grungy weirdness.
Yeah.
To Craven's earlier stuff versus what he would do later.
They did 10-31-98.
Oh,
that was Halloween one. That was the haunted house one where all the shit was coming out of the walls.
I did enjoy that one from what I remember.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I did as well.
Yeah, see, there you go. They knew what's up. They knew how to make really affecting stuff. I think they can only go better from here. So I'm glad they're doing horror. Horror's their thing. Let them fucking keep doing it.
I agree. Yeah. I'm excited to see what they do with Scream 6. I loved Scream 2022.
Yeah, me too.
And I mean, I talk about this in our horror roundtable, our 2022 horror roundtable, our season finale. So go check that out.
Covering so many movies.
So many movies. But I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It was like the whole time I was just watching in just like a delighted glee.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see what they continue to do with the franchise, and I'm excited to see what they continue to do outside of Scream and kind of explore. Right. A little bit.
Well, to me, okay, that brings up a really good point that I didn't realize until right now, but it felt like Scream, but it didn't feel like a ripoff or like a copycat. It felt just like Scream, but updated.
Well, it felt like it, I mean, it had the same kind of like on-the-nose humor, like the self-reflective kind of like, you know, commentary in horror that I think is also very Wes Craven-y.
Yeah, exactly. But it wasn't done in a way that I feel that felt inorganic. It felt natural, which is cool.
No, it was, it felt honest to the film.
Yes. And just as any humorous point in this movie does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really does feel like they're the perfect guys for it. So
yeah, agreed.
Keep going.
So, how are we feeling about this new contemporary brand of horror comedies? I know this came out in 2019, which was like 3 years ago, but that's still very recent.
Yeah, that's Midsommar time right there. Yeah. Shit.
I mean, you brought up, like, speaking of Midsommar, like, this is coming out around the same time as, like, these more, like, serious horror dramas, even, are coming out.
Really trying to set a theme here.
Really, yeah.
Like, oh my god.
Yeah. And I think this is also around the same time that, like, Happy Death Day is coming out.
Great series.
And then also, like, I think the year after was Freaky.
I didn't see that one. But yeah. I remember the trailer.
I mean, it's,
Vince Vaughn, you know?
It's Vince Vaughn. Like, I can't imagine it being not funny.
Right.
And it did look very funny. And I did hear good things about it.
Yeah,
it
had good reviews.
Quite my thing.
I mean, I love me some Vince Vaughn, but I feel you on the contemporary brand of horror stuff. Like, I feel like it, it does, it's weird for them to both do it well, but I think what really distinguishes this version of horror comedy from previous ones, even down to Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, maybe the first proto version of this, is there's a comedic energy that is nonstop throughout the film.
Yeah.
And the only times when it kind of goes away is when the stakes are high. And when even you're stressed. Then, yeah, and even then, you know, when they have high stakes and they can turn around into a laugh, that's a good fucking movie. And a lot of these movies do that incredibly well. And Ready or Not's not an exception to that at all. Like, it just does, it knows how to bounce, which I think a lot of movies in any genre struggle with. But to really do a horror comedy with, like, that kind of pace and momentum and keep the momentum going It's great. It has two genres to pull from the entire time, and it does it well. So
agreed. And I think it's a healthy balance of both. Like, I think when we talked about this back in like season one, when we covered Tucker and Dale versus Evil,
great movie.
It leans so much more on that scale, right? That horror comedy scale.
We're going to revisit that scale for an episode.
We do.
Really do.
It was fun to make, too. But revisiting that scale and realizing Tucker Dale versus Evil is more on the comedy side. This is like dead center, perfect balance, horror and comedy.
I still put a little more comedy.
Really?
But like a slight. Like a slight.
Like just a touch?
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge more towards comedy. All right.
Yeah, Brody elevates it, I think, to comedy.
Well, I think but that's also still like kind of sad. Like, I think he's like the humor elements there are definitely present, but he's also like traumatized by his family. And he's the one who called his family on that guy in the beginning of the movie.
But I think,
and so he's kind of like haunted by what he did, and I think that's kind of why he's like a functioning alcoholic and kind of a fuckhead.
I know. Right? But I mean, to me, I think to tip the scale the other way would have to be, I think, a little more terrifying. There'd have to be a little more terror in the movie throughout.
That's fair. Okay, yeah, because it's true. This isn't like a it's a PG-13 R-rated horror film.
Exactly.
Like, it is not scary.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't even necessarily even like really good big jump scares.
No, there's not even horror imagery really. It's more like
it's spooky.
It's spooky.
This is a great Halloween watch, like just for like the vibes.
Yeah, definitely. But again, it's not like Tucker and Dale vs. Evil had such a slasher look to it that happened to have comedy.
Okay.
Versus this, which is again, it's more in the middle ground, but because of the lack of terror in scenes, I think it more falls in the line of the comedy side, but only a little bit.
Fair.
Only a little
All
bit.
Right.
It's definitely close to the middle.
I can see where you're coming from.
All right. Doing it.
Okay, so moving on. Samara Weaving, maybe a nepotism baby, but she is quickly establishing herself as a scream queen in her own right. What kind of horror films would you like to see her in next? Because she was in The Babysitter.
Okay.
She was in this. She's been in a couple other things.
Well,
but she's kind of doing, you know, she's doing the occasional horror film. She's going to be in Scream 6.
There you go.
So she's kind
of... Slashers, high concepts.
And, yeah, exactly. She's kind of being in quite a few slasher flicks.
You know what? I have the exact answer.
Okay.
Give me Samara Weaving in a fucking Rob Zombie movie.
I would love that.
Something about her eyes and the makeup of herself.
She has crazy eyes.
Yeah, she does. She definitely has that... Margot Robbie, like, vibe in ways, but, like, you know, Margot Robbie wouldn't do a Rob Zombie movie. She's just not built for that. She's a Scorsese girl.
Right.
Give me Samara Weaving and let her do a zombie take on some brutal-ass hellbilly fucking horror. I want to see that shit.
All right, I fucks with it. I would love that.
How about you? What you think?
I was trying to think of, like, because I would be cool with seeing her in, like play something like for serious, like something like a little bit more on like the horror, like drama side of things, not necessarily like an A24, but like something on a little bit more of like not so out there or something so fantastical, right? Because like the horror films that she's been in, it's like Ready or Not, The Babysitter, The Second Babysitter. She was also in Guns Akimbo. Just like she's kind of in like fantastical, wacky bullshit.
High concept shit.
Yeah, high concept. Yeah. So I would be interested in seeing her in something like a little bit more dark or like a little bit grittier.
Okay, gritty I can definitely see. That's kind of why I feel like I went to zombie because, so to me, I can see her in like, if it wasn't zombie, like in an old movie like an old Oliver Stone movie, she kind of has that.
Okay, yeah.
Like Natural Born Killers or something like that.
Yeah.
She definitely would fit. But since they don't have those kind of movies anymore, I felt like zombie's the only one that would kind of fulfill that role. So,
fair enough. Okay, so, Anthony.
Yes.
You're getting married. Pause for laughter.
Sure, Alex. That's a fictional question. Fun time, right?
Right, yeah. This is fictional fun question because the thought of either of us getting married is just simply ridiculous. What do you do to thwart your obviously homicidal demonic in-laws?
Oh, my God. Okay, so...
And
As a Mexican, I am bringing in the spiciest salsa I can.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we're doing like, I'm like, you know what? Customary Mexican tradition, if you want me to be part of your family, before we do the games.
Uh-huh.
We do one chip dip. Just one.
Just a single?
Just one chip dip, and I pull Adam Brody, and I their diarrhea before they can even leave.
Oh, no, their heads just fucking explode.
Yeah, you know, the steam coming out their ears, it's perfect.
Oh, yeah, it's like a... Yeah. It's like a cartoon, like their faces, like slowly it's like a thermometer and it's just like,
yeah. Like, okay, cool. And I'm like, oh, is this the card you guys wanted? Is this the card?
Fuck you guys.
I'm leaving.
Okay.
They're shitting their brains out in all the 16 bathrooms they have in that one fucking mansion. Yep. It's perfect.
Yep. Love it. All right.
Hot salsa.
Okay.
That's me.
Okay.
How about you?
I would lean into being the white trashiest person. Like, I would
want to kill you sooner.
No, I would lean into my roots. I would start putting on, like, country line dancing music and would just like be like, all right, this is the moves. They'd get so into it because white people can't like refuse a line dance.
That's true. Even the rich ones, something in their hearts.
No, yeah. They hear a fiddle. They cannot help themselves.
Just imagine the one fiddle you're putting in like the speakers.
Yes. Well, it's just like a good country line dance. And then it's just
where
like,
where all this hay come from?
And then it's just like, okay. And then it's just like,
it just skedaddles back.
Yep. And that's how I would escape.
That's a very Scooby-Doo way of getting out of there. That's perfect.
You said salsa.
Yeah, I mean, there's no Mexican Scooby-Doo either. So.
Fair enough.
I like it. Worked.
Okay, so that's how out. I would escape it. Yeah, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anthony Fuentes.
Yes, yes, yes.
The nightmare's over. You're no longer getting married.
Oh, cool.
Rate this movie out of 5 lingering foreshadowing shots.
Oh my god, 4. It's okay. A solid 4. I think this is honestly, like, it's kind of great.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I can't give it a 5. I can't give it a 5.5. I don't think it's like that level of esteem. I was considering 3.5 as my base, but honestly, I'm considering everything I've rated 3.5 in the past, like, season... Season 4 is better than a lot of those.
I like how you're like, I have to wiggle in that we're in season 5 because he's like very excited that we're in season 5.
I'm so excited, she knows. But yeah, it's better than a lot of the stuff that we've seen. So I'm like, you know, give it a fucking 4. I think it deserves a 4. It's a solid, just fun, rompy time that you're just going to enjoy no matter what level of attention you're paying to it. It's just that good. So,
yeah,
it's 4. Not perfect.
I agree.
Yeah, 4.
I'm gonna give it a 4 also. I was at first, I was like, I'm gonna give it like a 3.5 or maybe like a 3.75 if I want to get like real fucking granular.
Yeah.
But no, it's a 4. Yeah. Like, it, I mean, like I said, I really enjoy this movie. There's nothing that I can really outwardly criticize other than like my suspension of disbelief kind of being a little fucked with in this.
Yeah.
But even then, like, that's just my problem, my issue with having the brain that I'm cursed with having.
Yeah, I mean,
like, there's not much I can do about that.
It's a little cartoony. I guess that's it.
But that's fine. Yeah. Like, that's not even necessarily inherently a bad thing. Like, it's a fucking fun movie.
Exactly.
And I love it. And I suggest everyone go watch it. Yeah. It's, if you have an FX account, check it out.
Yeah, if not, it's like $4.
And even then, like, they rotate it between that and Hulu pretty often.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll get to check it out, but please, please, please check it out.
It's brutal Looney Tunes. Fucking Looney Tunes.
It is kind of Looney Tunes.
You'll enjoy it. It's a great movie.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts before we close out this episode?
Good movie. Watch it. Ready or not, so I can enjoy yourself.
Very good. Thank you, Anthony. Okay, that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. That was Ready or Not from 2019.
That's right.
Next week, Anthony, what are we talking about?
Oh, we're bringing back Cocaine Steve. The prime of Cocaine Steve.
We are?
Yeah. Next week's Cocaine Steve. You didn't remember that?
No, I don't. I haven't looked at what we're covering.
Okay.
It's fine. You don't have to tell me. I'll look at it later.
It's Cocaine Steve and... another director we haven't covered yet, who's actually one of the most iconic horror directors in the history of horror. So, yeah, it's going to be a great fucking episode.
Sounds like a great time. I'm so excited.
We referenced it in our season premiere month for season four.
Fuck, I'm an idiot.
You forgot, didn't you? Now you looked at the schedule, now you saw, now you know what we're covering.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I'm stupid.
We're definitely going...
it's a next, Monday.
A next level on that one, so I can't, no, I can't wait.
This is... You know what? I am an idiot because this is one of the few things that I have seen from my childhood.
See, there you go. Wow. Yeah, great movie. Again... It's going to be fantastic. We're going to get Cocaine Steve in the 80s again. Always a fun thing to refer back to.
And we love Cocaine Steve.
That's right. But also, again, one of the most important directors in horror ever worked on this film. So it's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Thank you for sticking with us through September. It is going to get progressively busier and busier from here on out.
Yes, yes.
Anthony and I and some friends are going on vacation next month.
That's right.
We grabbed Anthony and waterboarded him until he agreed to go on vacation.
Making me fucking take time off.
I'm very excited. So stay tuned for that because it's going to be... so spooky.
It's gonna be a great time.
And we also, you know, our traditional Halloween Horror Nights ventures coming up soon, too.
Technically next week from this episode.
Yeah! Next week! Oh my god!
Yeah.
Are you so excited? I have to order my shirt.
I have to think of a shirt, too, son of a bitch!
I have to order my shirt. Oh god!
You'll see it on the Instagram.
Anyway, so thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please make sure you are subscribed wherever you are listening. If you are listening on Spotify or iTunes, please make sure you leave us a 5-star rating. And if you are listening on iTunes, please, please, please take the time to write us a review. It does help other people find the podcast, and it means the fucking world to us. You guys are awesome. We love you.
Yes.
And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And I think with that, that is it for this week. I guess the real true moral of the story is don't marry rich.
Oh, that's right. And if just burn their homes.
Yeah, just burn them down from the get-go.
All their homes.
So,
that's fine.
Bye, guys.
See ya.